think that what we have here is a situation where since 1978, both the Board of Fish and the Board of Game have been deliberately trying to avoid dealing with subsistence. The 1978 legislature, in conjunction with Congress, tried to impress upon Alaskans that subsistence had a place in the utilization of wild natural resources. Because of certain political appointments on both of those boards, these men deliberately tried to circumvent the law. Hear from Don Collinsworth today, who says that the department needs some sort of framework in order to manage fish and game. That framework is an allocation framework that Don Collinsworth is speaking to. And that's sort of curious because Don Collinsworth has always stated, and as a matter of fact stated under oath in another lawsuit that I was involved with here just this year concerning set net fishing and sport fishing on the peninsula, where he said that the Department of Fish and Game has a professional position that they will not get involved in allocation questions, so they will not make statements one way or the other as to who should or who should not receive resources. But today, we hear Don Collinsworth at least implicitly saying to this committee that we would like for you to pass this bill to allocate subsistence uses to rural residents only. The problem is not the law. I think that the focus should be turned away from the current statute and put squarely where it belongs, and that is in the lap of the administrative bodies that are responsible for protection, management, and allocation of these resources. The recent Alaska decision was sort of a punishment to the Board of Game for its failure to act for the last decade. And now the proponents of 288 and 231 expect for you as a Senate body to do something within the next 2 or 3 days, or if you have a special session within a few more days, do something that they have failed to do and neglectfully failed to do for years. I think that that's unfair to this body. I think that the Senate should have ample opportunity to sit down and adequately address this issue over a much more extended period of time, given much more extended input from the people who are going to be affected. The Board of Fisheries, on the other hand, decided that it would be more convenient to push subsistence to the far corners of the state than to really deal with the questions that the 78 legislature mandated it to do. And for that reason, they came up with a definition of customary and traditional uses to mean only rural uses, which was clearly in contravention of the 78 legislature. I've heard all sorts of things from the administration this morning that really scare me as an Alaskan citizen. What worries me is that instead of these people being concerned about the resources themselves, they're more concerned about certain political allies and that sort of thing in the name of balancing interests amongst the user groups. Not once have we heard Don Collinsworth this morning say that any of the resources that are supposedly going to be affected by this mandate from the Supreme Court are in jeopardy. Where are the fish and game resources at this point in such a state that they are not biologically viable? I challenge Mr. Collinsworth to point that out, particularly in the Cook Inlet area. There are none. The fish are in a healthy condition. The other thing is that there was lots of statements about there could be no limits placed on subsistence. Well, limits have all sorts of meanings to people, but as the Alaska decision from the Court of Appeals pointed out, that restrictions under the definition that the court gave it, that there could be no substantial impairment of subsistence use. Now, substantial impairment meant that if you were going to allow commercial or sport harvest of resource, then it's only but right, and under the mandate of the 78 legislation, that you allow some sort of subsistence harvest of that resource. But that's not to say that you can't set bag limits or quotas, or seasons and times and areas, all those tools that are set forth in Title 16 for the proper and reasonable regulation of any fisheries or wildlife resource. So yes, under both Madison and Alaska, you very well can have limits set on the amount of fish or game that is taken by any particular user. In March of this year, the Board of Fisheries has already passed the emergency regulations to deal with the coconut fishery for subsistence. And in the salmon area, they have allowed a king salmon subsistence fishery to take place in Tyonic, which has a quota of 4,200 king salmon. The late fall coho fishery, which is, begins in August, August 15th, has a 50 salmon quota bag limit on it per permit holder. So yes, the board has already set those kinds of limits. It's very difficult in 15 minutes to address the question of subsistence, because it's a question that has been going on since.
Mr. Robinson?
But I would like to say finally this, Senator Bruce, that what is most important in dealing with this problem is that you have to deal with it on a matter of uniformity and equality amongst all the citizens of the state. We are, with relationship to this resource, similarly situated. And if 288 is passed under the guise that has been promulgated by the House and by the governor's office, I'm afraid that we're going to have another court decision from our Supreme Court that's going to say, well, we didn't address the constitutional issue in Madison because it was the easy way out, to say it was against legislative intent. Now we will say that because it creates this discrimination without a rational basis, since residency has no relevancy to the use of these resources, that the law is unconstitutional. And then we'll be back here again trying to resolve this problem when we have the opportunity now to sit down as rational individuals and come up with a solution.
Mr. Robinson, I don't know whether you know it or not, but you didn't have 15 minutes, but it looks like you went pretty close to it. If you'd care to stand by for a moment, the commissioner would like to say a few words. Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Robinson made several points that I'd just like to quickly respond to a couple of them. About the biological status of the resource in the state, I would like to say that, generally speaking, across the state, the status of the resources is good. They're in a good productive condition. We have had some enormously good survival years on salmon, and the production statewide has been highest in the state's history, and even prior to statehood, going back as far as we have records, our salmon production is good. Most of our caribou herds, the population of caribou herds, say over 5,000 animals, they're in good shape, and they're either increasing or they're at high levels already. The Western Arctic caribou herd is approaching 200,000, porcupine caribou herd 140,000. So generally across the state, I think because of the good sound management over the many years, our herds of game animals and our fish populations are in good shape. And we do absolutely have the authority to protect the sustained yield of those resources. It is true that that we in the Department of Fish and Game endeavor to manage the resources and to allocate those resources in ways that are described to us by the boards of fisheries and game, and we try not to get involved in the allocation issues and trying to determine what's in the best public interest in the allocation of those resources amongst competing uses. But the resources that we're dealing with are limited. They're not an unlimited quantity of resources. We're harvesting most of our resources, our game resources and fishery resources, right to the biological limit that we have defined, so we are in an allocation mode. And we do have a pattern of allocation of those resources, both on the game side for sport hunting and commercial use, and on the fishery side for personal use, sport use, subsistence use, and for commercial use. We have those patterns have been established. And what I have suggested is that without a bill similar to 288, that what we will have is that we will have a change in that pattern of use of those resources. And what I'm suggesting is that pattern, that change, is something that should be considered and should be done premeditatively in terms of making a decision to change that pattern of use. Because what you're going to get is a change in the pattern of use that is a result of a court decision that people have not sat down in front of the Board of Fisheries or the Board of Game and have gone through a very deliberative process in establishing the allocation between the various interests that utilize in a beneficial way these resources. We had a pattern of use that was established through a regulatory process, through an extensive advisory committee system, regional councils, board deliberations, an open administrative process. Now, I'm sure people are not always satisfied with how those resources are allocated, but they at least can participate in the process to allocate those resources. What we have now is a court decision, two court decisions, that is going to change that pattern, those institutionalized patterns of uses, in a way that you can only speculate, but I can tell you that it is going to change. And whether that's in the public interest broadly, to have that change come about simply because of the amount of resources people are going to want to go out and take. I just will finish up quickly by saying Mr. Robinson is right. You can put a 50-fish bag limit on people on the east side for personal or subsistence use with the use of nets. It's quite a different thing if you have 50 people harvesting 50 fish each or 500 people harvesting 50 fish each. And since the class of subsistence user now is broad, it is all the people in the state, you can go into those fisheries and the number of people who choose to participate in those, even with the bag limits, are going to alter the current pattern of use. And if that's preference, then that's a preference. But people should understand that is going to come about.
Thank you, Commissioner. I just want to say one thing. I've stayed out of this thing. I have put in a bill, Senate Bill 320, that addresses that, and somebody said it's the first time anybody's had courage enough. Well, the dictionary had courage enough, but I think this is where we went a little bananas. I don't know what anybody has read it or not, but all I want to do is tell you what, out of the dictionary, what subsistence means. Existence, being, continuance, an act of providing sustenance. The barest means in terms of food, clothing, and shelter needed to sustain life, the quality of being inherent, the status of something that exists in itself as an individual whole, the status of something whose very act of existing is its essence. Now that's, if that isn't on a needs basis, I don't know what it is. And that's right out of the dictionary. And I think we've interpreted the word subsistence to mean a lot more than it really does, and maybe we should get back to it. I would encourage you all, including the commissioner, to take Senate Bill 320 was introduced yesterday, and if there's any merit to it at all, I'd like to hear from you. If it's nothing more than another piece of confusion, tell me that too. I have no problems with it. But I think it solves a lot of the problems we have today. That's, again, my personal opinion. I would like to continue in Soldatna for one more, please. If any.
This is Chuck Robinson.
Mr. Robinson, I believe I've heard from you. Unless you do have, you're going to use your 15 minutes, come hell or high water, I suppose, huh?
No, I just have one short comment, Senator.
All right, go ahead.
Regarding patterns. The comment by Commissioner Collinsworth about the pattern of the use of sort of misses the mark to some degree, in that the much longer pattern of subsistence use in our state that it has been a use that has been open to all Alaskans. The much shorter pattern of use has been this use that has been restricted to rural residents with support struck down. The people here in the Kenai Peninsula who were most affected by the board's regulations restricting the use to rural residents only did in fact participate in the board process. They didn't stay home. They went to the board hearing. They gave them all the information they needed to show them that they had this long-term pattern of use. And the board just simply ignored them and excluded them from the decision. What I'm afraid of is that if this bill is passed under its current language, these same people will be excluded again. Not because they don't have a use, but because they will be defined as not living in rural areas.
Thank you, Mr. Robinson. Mr. Porter, are you there? I just see your name on one of the deals.
Yes, sir. My name is Vern Porter. And the things that I have to concern with, I can't imagine the state of Alaska in the United States setting up a caste system of one can and one can't. You know, it's only been a few years ago, and he said, people that are black, you drink out of the fountain in the back of the building and right in the back of the bus. You can't do it in the United States. You just don't dare do it. You can't have a got your vote second, and you probably end up in a better situation. A lot of the publicity and a lot of decisions are made over a deer that was killed in Kodiak, a few moose that were killed in Fairbanks. There's no prosecution. I don't even think that there's even any investigations by the Department of Public Safety on the decimation of the geese in the flats on the Kuskokwim, Yukon. I don't think that there was any prosecution when the caribou were decimated in the wet northwestern portions of Alaska. You guys are going to have to settle down and realize that the methods and means available to the people in the state of Alaska, is that going to allow you to set up and say, yeah, you guys can go out there and subsist and get all that you want? We're familiar with it, the moose and the salmon and the other animals that we have down here on the peninsula and throughout the state of Alaska. It's not going to allow us to go out there and indiscriminately harvest. They just won't take it. We know it, and I think most people know it. But we're not going to stand aside and say that just because Joe Blow lives way the hell out in the middle of nowhere, he's allowed to do it, and somebody lives on the highway system, he's not. You're not going to get away with it. I'm not going to stand by. My kids, my whole family, they eat the fish and game. We don't abuse it. We just use it. And we've tried to stay within the letters of the law. We have to work and buy the things so we don't get out of the creeks and the hillsides. And I hope that you use your head, and I hope that you don't have to worry about your bullets. I don't care if you step on somebody's toes as long as you step on everybody's toes. Good luck on it. Real good people work. The biologists here are first class. Listen to them a little bit. They're going to help you out. They're professionals at it. You can't get any better. There may be somebody around the country that may be as good, but they're not any better. The guys know what they're doing with, and listen to them a little bit. I don't think anybody sat down and said, hey, what situation are we in? Go to them. You know, they're going to tell you if you can or if you can't. But don't be saying that one guy can and one guy can't. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Vern, for your comments. I do have one in in Yakutat. With a time constraint. Yakutat, come in, please.
My name is William Sheets, SHEETZ from Yakutat, okay? We were told we were going to be on the first on the meeting, but I'll make this quick, okay? One thing, why income levels never mentioned in the subsistence laws. As I read this bill, a person who is unemployed in an urban area has to go on food stamps or welfare, because it's considered an alternative resource. While a person who is employed in a rural area can fish and hunt for subsistence, no matter what their income. It may come down to the point where you must decide which is more important, food for hungry Alaskans or sport for sports fishermen and hunters. Using the term personal use seems to me to be a ploy to limit our rights to our common resources. When I say ours, I mean all Alaskans, city or rural. I take exception to what the our Commissioner of Fish and Game said. By what authority has the Commissioner refused to issue some subsistence permits where the court has decided otherwise? And I agree with Mr. Gilliam and Wasilla about what seems to be coming off. All we've been hearing here is testimony from the Department of Fish and Game and not much from the people in the state. And the Department of Fish and Game almost always seems to be biased. And that's pretty much what I have to say, gentlemen. And I am against this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'd like to go now to Anchorage.
This is moderator in Anchorage. I'd like to call Dale Bondrant to the microphone.
My name is Dale Bondrant, and I oppose the governor's bill, and I request full hearing to really show that there was and still is a lot of opposition to the so-called priority subsistence law. I am a party in a present lawsuit in Sir Daly's court here in Anchorage questioning the constitutionality of the rural residency eligibility. Democracy, the approach to a law allows a broad use by all citizens of the benefits and not as narrow as can be done. I looked at this new law and I can see that the Supreme Court is going to rule the same way as it did before. You have an item that says residency and you leave it up to the board to determine residency. The Supreme Court will find that the board has not that expertise, and of course the so-called priority subsistence user will continue to have these priority benefits while the rest of us fight this out in court. I have been a resident of Alaska for over 37 years. During that time, I have taken fish and game for my own personal use. Before the personal use nets were forced out of Cook Inlet, I fished at Point Warrensoft, later at Bird Creek. Since then, I have taken my fish with hook and line. And as far as there being any documentation, there is a lot of documentation in regulations, and it's published in a fish report of 1972 that shows that this was the favored method of taking personal use. I have enjoyed and respected the opportunity to take fish and game for my own dinner table. I believe that I have always done so within the law and with respect for the right of equal opportunity for all others. Those who know me are aware that I have spent hundreds of hours of my free time in the interest of protecting and enhancing Alaska's fish and game resources. I've served on many state and federal boards and committees and have organized and belonged to several organizations whose purpose are to protect the habitat and promote professional fish and game management. I even campaigned and voted several times for the abolishment of fish traps. It has always been my strong belief and commitment that our fish and wildlife are true common property resource that belongs to all the people. The Alaska State Constitution was written by those who believed this to be true. It clearly states that whenever occurring in their natural state, fish and wildlife and waters are reserved to the people for common use. The records of the Constitutional Convention supports this intention of equality, equal opportunity for users of these resource uses. But this is no longer true, and I, along with 80% of all Alaskans, are now third-class citizens. The reason given to support my classification is because of where I reside within this state. This is not the democratic intent of the Constitution. The political winners who support priority subsistence so by narrowing the eligibility to only those who are rural residents. But these same spatial enters support an equal right for non-resident Alaskans in the limit entry commercial fishery. They support the equal right of these non-residents to harvest over 26 million Alaska salmon, but at the same time adamantly deny 80% of Alaskans their equal right of opportunity to take fish for their own dinner table and base that denial only on where they reside within the state. At the urging of these same hypocritical politicians, it is no wonder that the federal government would include such a discriminatory segregation of class on their land. No such eligibility as area residents exists in any of the other of these United States. Is this equality under the law? Instead of demanding fair treatment for all Alaskans, our governor uses this discrimination as a weapon of threat against our citizens. Even under the Supreme Court Madison decision, that recognition of all Alaskans as equal personal consumptive users, those who still wish to narrow the eligibility deny the greater percentage of Alaskans their equal right and refuse to recognize the hook and line personal use fishermen. I noticed that in this bill they've even went so far as to put a word in the method of the personal use that says similar to tie it in with the nets and so forth. The history of hook and line is long, well documented, and definite. It is thousands of years older than the fish wheels, which were introduced into Alaska in the very recent past. During the early 1950s, when personal use net fisheries were being eliminated in the Cook Inlet, hook and line personal use fishing was recognized by regulation and were reported as the most common method. It is still present in the regulations for subsistence halibut fishing and for the fishing through ice in some areas. Statute section 16.05940 states subsistence fishing means with gill net, seine, long line, or other means defined by the Board of Fisheries. In fact, the Board has the right to define hook and line as subsistence method. Why does the DA's office oppose this? The rural resident not only right to take Fish and Game, but has the right to demand which species they prefer and will accept. The Tyonic residents demand and were allowed to take 70 king salmon per household besides all the other salmon that they take and are not to be counted. The residents of Unit 23, 24, and 26 are allowed to take up to 3 sheep of either sex for subsistence use. These are exclusive hunting areas. And then Dolchina Bird will become an exclusive hunting area for subsistence when the people up there start demanding 4 caribou each like it is allowed in the western part of the state. The courts have a rule that the subsistence users can at any time take as much fish and game as they can use. This is the type of greed that is promoted by honoring a spatial privilege group. This greed and demand will eventually eliminate any and all of these common property resources used by most Alaskans. The Constitution allows for the recognition of preferences among beneficial uses of these resources.
Mr. Bondurant, I would request that you summarize, please.
Now, I'm gonna try to summarize, but I do object to the way these hearings have been held. We've heard from the Department of Fish and Game, the Department of Law. I've sat in 4.5 days of fishery hearings and seen them guide this thing through, and we are being denied the right to face the legislatures in full hearings. And I think that it's a shame that there's such a hurry to pass this bill that the public cannot get a chance to really discuss it.
You've got some bad information so far, according to your testimony, the last few words you said. I would also tell you have ample opportunity to have this face-to-face with legislators during the interim period.
Well, I sat in one of these teleconferences with the House, and they allowed 2 people from Anchorage to talk, and there was at least 6 or 8 people from Condover talk, and Bob Blake talked for over 15 minutes. So I am restating that we haven't had the time to present this. I think Mr. Joseph has proven this when he says there is very little opposition to this. I went to these hearings and seen and heard all this opposition.
Mr. Bondurant, as I said before, we'll be hearing this in Anchorage, Fairbanks, and give the people and such as yourself ample opportunity to discuss it before any bills are passed. I hope that satisfies your inquiry.
It wouldn't surprise me if it was passed tomorrow, but I thank you again.
Well, it sure as hell surprised me.
The moderator in Anchorage, Julie Kinfield, now ready to give testimony.
Go ahead, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Julie Kinfield. I'm a special assistant to the president of the Alaska Federation of Natives. The board of directors of the Alaska Federation of Natives is composed of representatives of 12 regional corporations formed under the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act and the 12 nonprofit Native associations deliver human service programs throughout the state. This morning, on behalf of AFN, I'd like to express our appreciation for the opportunity to testify in support of a long-term solution to the subsistence issue. As you are well aware, Alaska is unique in that it is the only one of our states in which the continued health, safety, and general well-being of a significant number of residents is dependent upon the harvest of fish, game, and other wild renewable resources for personal and family consumption. The economy of our rural communities is dependent upon the continuation of these uses. In 1978, the Alaska legislature recognized this unique reality by enacting the state subsistence law. In 1980, the U.S. Congress enacted legislation which established a similar priority in federal law. After our state subsistence law was put into place, a group of Alaskans who disagreed with the policies in that law were successful in obtaining enough signatures to place an initiative on the 1982 election ballot. This initiative, had it passed, would have repealed the 1978 subsistence statute. The subsistence issue was thoroughly debated during the 1982 election. The initiative was defeated and the 1978 subsistence law was retained. At that time, regardless of whether a particular Alaskan supported or opposed the repeal initiative, every Alaskan who voted assumed that the 1978 subsistence hunting and fishing priority was limited to Native and non-Native residents of rural communities. believe the 1978 legislature actually intended, and it is certainly not the result which is mandated by the federal subsistence law. We are supportive of efforts to amend Title 16 of the Alaska statutes to the extent necessary to provide the Board of Fisheries and Game the same regulatory authority and flexibility which they possessed on the day prior to the issuance of the Madison decision, no more and no less. Mr. Chairman, since the 1982 defeat of the subsistence repeal initiative, the boards have implemented the subsistence statute in a fair and reasonable manner. The regulatory subsistence is proof that the 1978 subsistence law is both good public policy and a workable way to protect Alaska's unique rural economy without having to drastically reallocate hunting and fishing opportunities for those of us. However, such disruptions and reallocations will occur, and federal management of our fish and game resources is inevitable if the Madison decision is not reversed by legislative action. On behalf of the Alaska Federation of Natives, I would respectfully urge that a law be enacted this session which would provide a long-term solution to this issue, that there's no sunset clause connected to the solution, and that the Alaska statutes comply with ANILCA. I am further directed by our Board of Directors to inform you that they have passed a resolution which directs us to ask for federal intervention if this is not resolved this session. The state has to comply with federal law. There is no option. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anchorage, if you just stand by for a moment, I have one time constraint in Ketchikan. Mr. Ingman, I believe, Ketchikan. Mr. Ingman, you there?
Yeah, good morning, Senator. Roger Ingman, representing Southeast Sane Boat Owners and Operators. I'll be brief. We, the Board of Directors of the Association, have voted in favor of House Bill 288. And after hearing what you said about subsistence, the definition, I wish that the definition would become law. We just received Senate Bill number 320. The board hasn't reviewed it yet. I will bring it to their attention. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I'll go back to Anchorage, Mr. Olson. While you're approaching the mic, I will say that the Senate goes into session at 11 o'clock. I fully expect to be absent from it. In case I'm needed on the floor, I will call in at ease and come right back unless I can get somebody to handle this. I want to continue. Go ahead, Anchorage.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, and members of the Senate State Affairs Committee. My name is Renita Zillis. I am the Director of the Subsistence and Natural Resources Department for Rural CAP.
Morning, sir.
The Rural Alaska Community Action Program. Rural CAP serves a broad-based constituency of predominantly rural Alaska residents, many of whom subsist, and many who rely upon commercial fishing for their livelihood. Therefore, our agency has taken a great interest in the progress of House Bill 288 since its introduction in March. Representatives from Rural CAP and its affiliated organizations have participated in public hearings and teleconferences on the subject of House Bill 288. We have kept our constituency informed about the many varied issues which have arisen in the debate over the Madison ruling, and the widespread coverage this matter has received in the press, over the radio, and on television. Very soon after House Bill 288 was introduced, the Board of Directors of Rural CAP passed Resolution 8506. This was transmitted to Juneau, Senator Abood. Have you received it?
That's affirmative.
In that case, I won't read it, but I would like it to be submitted as part of my testimony into the record of this proceeding.
It will.
Thank you. The resolution touches very generally upon the impacts of the Madison ruling on the taking of fish and game resources. I would like to briefly discuss this Alaska Supreme Court decision and then say a few words about the more recent decision handed down by the Alaska Court of Appeals in the matter of the State of Alaska on Appeal versus David Aluska. The Madison Supreme Court ruling struck down the Board of Fisheries' definition of subsistence, specifically the part that said, in order for a person to qualify as a subsistence user, he or she would have to live in a rural area. The court said that this definition did not give the kind of protection to subsistence users that was meant to be given by the State of Alaska's 1978 subsistence priority law. The Aluska decision basically says that since no regulations currently exist for subsistence taking of game, a subsistence hunter cannot be prosecuted for taking moose or caribou resource is threatened. The likelihood of a sustained yield of, for example, salmon fisheries that used to be taken mostly by commercial fishermen being threatened is very remote. Therefore, the Madison ruling that says the Board of Fish cannot differentiate between rural and urban to decide who is a subsistence user and who is not means that just about anyone in Alaska qualifies for subsistence uses of fish and game. This creates a critical situation. The commercial fishermen who rely on fishing for their livelihood will have to wait until the Department of Fish and Game or the Board of Fish says all subsistence users have been satisfied before they will be allowed to take commercial fish. The sports fishermen will have to wait too. Meanwhile, who is to say when the board or department can say truthfully and with documentation to back themselves up that all subsistence users have been satisfied? The Alaska decision further muddies the water. It says since the Madison ruling makes almost everybody subsistence users, and since there are no regulations for subsistence hunting, because of Madison there can't be any, then almost anyone can take almost anything and claim subsistence as a defense. In this situation, the potential for harmful incursions on fish and game populations can be seen all too clearly as a real possibility. We at Rural Cat believe that individual senators are, in fact, concerned about acting on the subsistence issue this session, and for good reason. Lack of action this session, aimed at correcting the imbalance created by the Madison Court decision, will result in serious harm to commercial and sports users of especially fisheries resources this spring and summer. Those who have subsisted in rural Alaska will continue to do so and suffer little immediate impact as a result of inaction or delay by the Senate in 1985. This inequity is not in the interest of the people of Alaska. No public official could countenance a return to the divisiveness of 1982 when the subsistence repeal effort split the people of this state. By timely responsible action this session, such as passing House Bill 388, you have the opportunity to defuse a potentially explosive situation. Thank you for this opportunity to testify on this vital issue, and good morning.
Thank you very much. Warren Olson, please. Mr. Deal.
Mr. Olson is approaching the mic, and Mr. Bonney would like to testify following him if possible.
Yes, Chairman Abood, members of the committee, appreciate your time this morning. I also am concerned that, and hopefully, and I'm encouraged by your comments, that we will have additional time to comment on this particular bill locally. I'm a 25-year resident. I have been a member of the advisory board in the past for up to 4 years. I was chairman of Proposition 7 in the Anchorage area, and you of all people being familiar with the ways of politics and campaigning and so forth, you absolutely have to know that the Capitol move defeated Proposition 7. The fact is that the Madison case reinforced the people that were in favor of Proposition 7. It calls for all Alaskans to be equal in use for resources. The legislators are actually, in the future, going to have to make a decision, and that decision is to go back to pre-1978, repeal the law, and actually go towards the federal law, because that's actually where the problem is going to be. When the people of Alaska determine or find out that 80% of the land base in Alaska is determined by federal law, then you're going to see a bigger uprising than you have right now. The fact is that north of the Yukon, we call it subsistence. North of Nenana, we call it personal consumption. And north of Ketchikan, we call it sport fishing. And it's a very important use of words that's been used to categorize people and put people in slots since I've seen this action in 1978. And the question really, I would think the legislators would ask the Attorney General once and for all for an opinion of whether the proposed laws are constitutional or not. And I'm sure most of you know that in 1978, the Attorney General did not come down with any opinion on whether or not the law was constitutional at that time. And I think you're dealing in an area that's unconstitutional at this time. You could save a lot of time and a lot of money and a lot of anguish among user groups if this particular question were determined. Simon from Bethel, it said that the law has not excluded anybody. The fact is, I called the Park Service the other day, said, fine, we've got a Madison case by the Supreme Court of Alaska. I'd like to hunt down Wrangell, St. Elias, and of course, they denied me. The comment from the park personnel were the fact that they had been instructed not to talk to anybody in the public about the Madison case, and that as far as they were concerned, the decision had never been made. And for the people in this particular area and in the Sioux Center Basin, that's pretty drastic action. There's pressures from certain groups in town that if we solve the Kenai Cook Inlet question, we're going to solve the subsistence question. Well, if you talk to the people that live on the east side of Lake Louise Road, they can hunt and fish in the Wrangell, St. Elias. The people on the west side cannot. If you talk to the people in the Talkeetna area, anybody that lives north of Talkeetna can participate in that area, and anybody that lives south cannot. So looking for a patchwork legislation is ludicrous at this time. If you really notice who pays for this confrontation, the legislators pay. They continually are voted out of office. They continually have to spend their money defending their position on this particular subject. And I'm certain that there's a lot of people throughout Alaska that think you're expendable. I think, Mr. Abboud, that at one time you told me to keep the camel's nose out of my tent. And I'd like to at this time remind you of the same thing. I think we're getting into a situation where certain people think you're expendable. And that's unfortunate, because that actually has been the casualty all along in this particular subject. Thank you very much.
I never did say I was indispensable. I'm just trying to do a good job. And as far as the camel's nose, you must have interpreted it wrong. May we have another contestant, please?
Mr. Hicksbody is approaching the mic now.
Chairman, what's this about camel's nose?
You're not Arab, so you wouldn't
understand. Mr. Hicksbody speaking, Senator Abboud. Question to you. How much of the, how many of the committee are still there? Are you all alone, or?
No, I have Senator Vic Fisher that just walked in. And now just walked out. I am going to hold this teleconference. After all, you've got to realize that we are in session right now. And secondly, this is being electronically recorded, and I need this testimony for further action. So, Mr. Bonney, if you care to go ahead, or if you're looking for a big crowd, we don't have one at the table. We've got a lot sitting in the background. The commissioner is still sitting at the table. So if you'd like to continue, please do.
For the record, Senator Abboud, I really appreciate the chance even to talk to you alone, even though we have done this before, and I'll try to keep as brief as I can. Technically, I'd like to address what's happening in the fact that every group that I know of, including family groups, have been split asunder by the different interpretations of the Madison decision. I've watched four support group get split up. I've watched, well, every group get split up. The thing that we're looking at, and I've heard addressed a lot today, and I feel have my own special feelings about, is the constitutionality of the subsistence rules in the first place, and that is not what I want to address today. I have my own feelings about that, and I want to address, even though not perfect, the governor's bill 288. The governor's bill